This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Friday, August 14th, 2009. Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another conference edition of the Toastmasters Podcast. My name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And it's been a fantastic, amazing day, hasn't it, Ryan?
Certainly.
We've spoken with a bunch of amazing people, five of which we have recorded the conversations to. Starting with
Byron Embry, who's a contestant for the International Speech Contest tomorrow.
We've then spoken with Mr. Lance Miller. He was the contest winner for the year 2005, the International Speech Contest.
And we spoke with Johnny Campbell, the transition man, who spoke during the leadership luncheon today.
AKA 007 of Change.
That's right.
And then we spoke with past international president, Mr. Ted Corcoran.
And finally, we spoke with Balraj Arunasalam, the District 82, immediate past district governor.
So here we go and enjoy the interviews. This is Bo and Ryan, and we're here with Mr. Byron Embry. How are you, Byron?
Good. How are you guys?
Great.
We're doing awesome.
Thanks for having me.
You bet.
So where are you from, Byron?
I am from Richmond, Kentucky, and I now reside in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Okay, and very what nice. Did you do prior to being a contestant for the speech contest?
Well, for the last 12 years, I played professional baseball. I was with the Atlanta Braves, the Kansas City Royals, and I just retired from the Seattle Mariners.
So do you have a baseball card of yourself?
I don't have one on me, unfortunately, but I'm sure you can go online and pull them up.
So you actually have a Topps baseball card of you?
Actually, I don't think I have a Topps. Actually, I do have a Topps.
Yeah?
I have two Topps cards, as a matter of fact.
That is cool. So cool.
What position did you play?
I'm a relief pitcher.
Relief pitcher. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Very nice. Nice. But what are you doing now? I told everybody you are a contestant in the speech contest for tomorrow. That is pretty darn exciting. How did you get to be from a baseball player to an accomplished speaker?
It's kind of funny. I come from a very long line of Baptist preachers. Standing in front of large crowds and addressing the audience is kind of hereditary. The strange thing is I grew up with a horrible speech impediment. Couldn't talk for years.
Wow.
Of course,
wow.
Been made fun of. All my interviews were with the media. Has always been comical with teammates and whatnot. Even my wedding day was struggled with repeating the vows.
Ooh.
And I got into Toastmasters. And slowly but surely, I realized I had a gift that no one knew I had. And so I began to compete in this competition this past year and just continue to go. And some of the skills I was just born with to address an audience kind of came out and kind of flourished. And here I am.
That's wonderful.
That's amazing. So, Byron, when you joined a Toastmasters club, were people like, oh my gosh, that's Byron. He's a professional baseball player.
Initially. And when I travel and do keynotes, that's the one thing I get. But I've really been working hard on the image of being a speaker who happened to have played baseball.
Oh, okay.
Versus the baseball player who is now speaking.
Gotcha.
I think public speaking came a little easier than throwing a baseball for me. Uh-huh. And so now it's a craft and a skill that I'm trying to mold and make it a profession.
Oh, fantastic.
Very good. And what are you doing to go down that route?
I speak now professionally.
Oh, you do?
Yes. I started, the only coach I've ever had has been Toastmasters. I've been in Toastmasters just a little bit over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And someone mentioned to me, you ought to go speak professionally. So I designed a speech, went and talked to school principals, got in the door, and it just kind of blossomed. And I've just kind of been off and running for the last few months speaking.
So within a year, did you actually conquer your speech impediment and launch a business as a professional speaker?
Yeah. And the funny thing is I still have a speech impediment. So when I design messages, some of the vowels and some of the syllables have to be spread apart so I don't stumble over them. So when I write my speeches, I can only have so many syllables per sentence. Unless it's a joke, then the joke I'm allowed more syllables.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of one of the tricks that I have to do. A lot of times I'll substitute a word in the middle of a sentence so I don't stumble over the word.
Let me ask you this: can you say Irish wristwatch?
Iris? No. Absolutely not.
Can you say it, Ryan?
I hope that's not in your speech tomorrow. Irish.
No, faster.
Wait. Irish wristwatch.
Irish wristwatch. Irish wristwatch.
You know, I'm going to work,
see,
I'm gonna
work
that out.
On that one.
I'm
you know
try
what?
That out.
We all have speech impediments.
That's true.
That is awesome. Wow. Well,
the best of success to you tomorrow.
Well,
it's going to be an exciting day, I'm sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There's going to be, what, another nine other contestants very talented as well.
Absolutely.
And how are you feeling, by the way? I mean, less than 24 hours away here, right?
You know what's so funny is that being a closer in baseball, you have a particular mentality.
Mm.
And now I'm competing in a completely different arena.
Right.
So some of that mentality is still there.
Yeah.
But here you got to smile. You got to be, you know, happy and cheesy. You really don't. So for me, I've prepared for this message. Everything has been set the way I want it. The message is groomed for me to show off my skills. And I'm ready. I'm very confident and very excited about it and ready to show on the road.
Did you have a coach specifically for the speech contest?
No, I haven't. Mr. Ed Tate and I got pretty close. David Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other people that I've had a chance to kind of speak with. But as far as coaching, my Toastmasters Club is just amazing. And I can't say enough about it. And it's kind of weird when you go out and speak in front of 5,000 people, which is not a big deal, but give me 15 Toastmasters, I'm scared to death.
Yeah.
It really is. And one thing you'll see in the professional ranking is that everyone knows when there's a Toastmaster speaker, because we cross every T, we dot every I.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you don't see on the professional level a whole lot of. I know a lot of pro speakers that would struggle in the competent communication manual.
Yeah.
But then I know a lot of competent communicators who would do well in the professional market.
Right.
So it kind of goes hand in hand.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing your speech tomorrow.
Oh, thank
I'm
you
sure
so
you're going to do well.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
We wish you the best.
Good
thank
luck.
You.
Yeah.
Okay,
thanks for being on with us.
Thank you, guys.
You take care.
Bo and I are sitting here with Lance Miller, the 2005 World Champion of Public Speaking. Lance, how are you today?
I am doing great, and it's great to be here with you.
Great to have you with us. So this whole convention must bring back memories for you, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The first time you come, it's a little overwhelming because of the international scope of Toastmasters and the competition and where your mind is, and it seems like there's all these people you don't know. And it's such a big affair, and after winning a world championship and becoming, in my case, such an integral part of Toastmasters and being able to get out to so many districts and meet so many people, it's a great time of camaraderie and friendship. And I know most of the people that come in here always meet a ton of new people, but it's a time where you actually just get reacquainted with a lot of great friends and a lot of great people.
Yeah. I was there in the audience for the 2005. That was in Toronto.
That was
right?
Toronto.
Wonderful city, by the way. That was a great convention there.
Yeah, it really was.
And I always talk about your speech because, to me, at least that time, it was the one speech that I said that's truly authentic. You know, it just came across as very authentic, and I said that guy's going to win.
Oh, cool,
and you won.
And I won.
I picked the winner. That's what I'm most proud of.
Circles right back to you, Bo.
It does. It's
well, you know, the thing I worked on. And if you know my story, I'm not the guy that got into Toastmasters and within a year I was on the international stage. I lost that contest for 12 years. I lost at the club level for 9 years. And I was really struggling with what kind of messages do I have? You know, what can I actually offer the world? And I didn't know. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, very early in Toastmasters, one of the founding members of my club had told me that I could be the world champion of public speaking. And my immediate response was, no, I couldn't. What is it? Okay. And she replied, that's like you had 5 to 7 minutes to speak to the world. And I remember thinking, what in the world could I ever offer anybody of any value? And there's that path you go through, at least I went through, of not looking at messages that you think the audience will like. I always lost speech contests when I came up with a message that I thought the audience would like. I thought this will be a sensational speech. They'll go, No, when I started winning contests was when I started talking about things that I believed in and that I felt compelled to communicate to the audience. And it while the desire to win was always there, I started to add in the added component of really trying to change the lives of the audience in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, by the time I got to international, having lost, going to district 3 years, or going to district 4 years in a row, going to regional 3 years in a row, and then after all that, losing in a division level contest, which just killed me. It was like a double mule kick to the chest in 2004 when I lost at division, and I really had to sit down and dust myself off and go, okay, put your focus back in on what you're doing. And when 2005 came along, and I was working, I'd gone up through regional, and I'm now looking, and I'm finally making it to international. What am I going to do? And I had a speech that I thought was great. I thought I'd just dust it off and come up here and win the contest. And I started giving it, and it was just not going as well as I thought. And I literally 2 weeks before the contest, I had everything I possibly had in me into that speech. And I was watching my videos, and I was watching the other five world champions from the five previous years, and I'm going, I'm not there. I'm not even worthy of being on the stage. And I really had to sit down and focus and say, well, what is it I want to say? What is it I want to communicate to these people? When you say it's authentic, I really dug into me and saying, this is my 5 to 7 minutes to speak to the world. Whether I win or lose, I need to give that audience a message that will in some way enhance their life. And what is it that I've discovered, and what it really was, and one of the lessons I learned through building my club, Renaissance Speakers in Hollywood, to one of the largest clubs in Toastmasters, and the work I did and all that, was the value of really validating what's right in people and quit pointing out the wrong things in them. And that changed my leadership style across all aspects of my life and in business when I did that. And that was the main message of my speech. But it was something I really believe that I think we've all had situations where we've had either bosses or family members or girlfriends or whatever that decide they just need to constantly point out what's wrong with you, you know?
Right, sure.
And it doesn't do any good at all. But the people that were always important to me, the people that I valued in my life, were the people that were going, Lance, you're doing okay, you're great at this, and I would love to talk to them. They were the people that were important to me, and I went, wow, maybe if I do that to other people, I'll be important to that person, and that's was sort of the genesis of that. But and I'd also learned through losing a lot of contests the importance of having a very, very specific, targeted, unique message. Mm-hmm. I lost in region... in the regional in 2002, and I literally thought I'd won the contest. And part of my stories are, not only did I lose more speech contests than I ever won, I sat in the audience and I thought I won the contest and lost it more times than I ever won it.
Of course.
Oh, boy.
And in 2002, I was sitting there, and I was the eighth speaker, last speaker regional, thought I won the contest. Speaker number three, they announced. Speaker number two, they announced. I'm literally standing up at my table, straightening my tie, getting ready to go up and get my trophy. And it was Jim Tucker from District 5 who I competed against. And Jim, we competed quite a bit, and he beat me quite a bit. But Jim took the thing, and I didn't even place. And again, I was one of those guys. I drove home, and I'm going, these speech contests are stupid, and I'm never competing again, and the judges are all morons. And
it was, you know, fixed.
All that stuff's going through my mind, you know, and I share this message, and I'm out at the districts. And I said, you know, I got home, looked in the mirror, and I said, you know, Lance, if you're speaking to an audience of morons, you better know your audience. Okay? But the truth
no matter, offense to the audience, of course.
The truth is that the audience isn't, they aren't morons. There's no conspiracies. There's a number of judges, and I wasn't willing to listen to what the audience was telling me. And at that time, I really looked at it, and I said, I got to listen to what this audience is telling me. I think I have a great message, and that it's getting across to them. And what they're telling me is, Lance, we're not getting it. Mm. And I realized there's no way I could ever learn from my mistakes if I was unwilling to admit that I was making any.
Good point.
But when I went back and listened to the speech topics, 7 of the 8 of us spoke about this very general topic of overcoming our barriers to achieve our goals. Jim Tucker had a very unique topic, a very personal story, and I realized at that point the importance of having a very, very specific, unique topic that the audience... it's very clear for the audience and what that message is, and that played in tremendously to that whole development of my speech in 2005.
How about the validation?
The validation, that was an inspiration. Every time I got my parking validated, I would walk up to somebody and I would say, do you validate? And in my mind, I would be going, if I was doing that, I'd be going, yeah, great tie, I love your car. You know, I mean, that's what I'd be doing.
Right.
And I said, do you have this opportunity? And every time I would do that, and I came up with that whole concept of really validating what's right in people.
Right.
From that, double entendre, and that's one of the things I've tried to do in a lot of my speeches, is I take a very simple topic or a very simple concept that everybody agrees with, and I make the point of that in the first part of the speech, and then I sort of change the significance on it in the second part of the speech to make it personal and make it real and give a life lesson to it.
Yeah.
And on that, and the fact that getting your parking validated is something everybody does every day, it's a very simple sort of insignificant action that we do.
Right.
But you take that and you apply to the fact that when you talk to somebody, there's a very simple, insignificant action you can do, but it can totally change somebody's life and do
right.
it.
Right. All right. That's
simple
great.
Simple but profound.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah,
so what's in the future for Lance Miller?
Well, I do a lot with Toastmasters. I'm very passionate about really seeing that anybody who gets into the Toastmaster organization gets to get out of their experience what they need to go out and live a more successful life for themselves. In the next 50 years, there's going to be 50 world champions. That's not what this is about. There's going to be 5 to 10 million people go through Toastmasters. We need to make sure that our clubs are strong, that the environment is something that is nurturing the best in them, and it's a great place to fail and screw up and a great learning environment so that they can develop their communication skills and develop their leadership skills to go out in the world and make a difference. And so I have a lot of club building programs that I have. I have a lot of speaking information programs on how to utilize the Toastmasters program in a more more effective manner that I'm working on. And I've got a number of things as far as online courses and stuff for sort of self-discovery. I've got one I'm writing on write your own philosophy of life, you know, so you can actually sit down and define what your values are and discover those things within you. I'm also in the middle right now of launching a new environmental company with a group of 3 other individuals, and we have a clean diesel technology for the heavy-duty diesel industry, so that's a whole other beast I'm working on over there. It's a huge international project that's very exciting. And we got 4 or 5 books penciled out, and if I ever have time to sit down and start writing, the chapter's all lined out. What I need to do, I just need to devote about 2 or 3 hours a day to just cranking out some words. I'll get those out.
Gotcha. So it sounds like that whole rumor of once you win world champion, you retire for life. It's not true.
Well, you retire from competing in the international speech contest,
but you still do things.
Well, I think it's interesting. Everybody, it depends on the individual.
Yeah.
It depends on the individual. And I'll tell you that to me, the contest was never about getting a plexiglass trophy.
It was about the cash, the
yeah,
hard cash.
Exactly, exactly. It was about the annuity that I got, the $5,000 a week for life is why I did it. It was about competence. It was a test of personal competence. And I wanted to be a world-class speaker. And that contest gave me a process to go through and pushed me past limits that I never would have achieved if I didn't have the pressure of that contest. And as I said, 2 weeks before that contest, I had everything in my speech, and I really had to dig down and push myself through my own personal barriers and get up to the next level of speaking. And the hardest thing to me in speaking is just being on stage, being yourself, and talking to the audience.
Yeah.
Because we have all this sort of mental mechanisms that get kicked into place where we are being something other than ourselves there, and thoughts are coming in. We don't know where they're being channeled in from, and places that are wet or that are normally dry, and places that are dry are soaking wet, and all these things are going on with us physically. And to just be in front of an audience and talk to them, and that's what I love to do. But also have the thinking processes in line that you can hold the attention of the audience, you can direct them as you need to, and put the structure into your speeches again that you can. It's an art. It's an art form the same way as painting or music or anything else is an art form. And I'm just very thankful that Toastmasters has this tremendous organization here that has given me the opportunity to get on stage, to screw up as much as I have, to fail, to continue to work those programs. I mean, I do a competent communicator manual every year just to keep those skills in. And, I'm double advanced communicator gold in the DTM. I've done, I don't know how many evaluated speeches and Toastmasters, but I just work the program really hard. And what I see with a lot of people, they'll do something once or twice and not do it again. And I just continued to work the program as hard as I could. I was able to get the benefits from it.
Well, job well done. Congratulations again on your past success and your current success. It sounds like you are a very busy man and doing a lot for Toastmasters, the organization. We appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. It's certainly a labor love, I'll tell you.
All right. Thank you very much, Lance Miller, for being with us.
Thanks, Lance.
Bye.
And Bo and I are sitting here with Mr. Johnny Campbell. Johnny Campbell was the speaker at the Leadership Luncheon today. He is the 007 of Change, codename
The Transition Man.
Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Well, hey, thank you, Bo and Ryan, for having me here.
Our pleasure. So you spoke today at the Leadership Luncheon. What was your message? Neither Bo nor I were able to attend.
Well, the message was called The 21st Century Leader, and my whole message was about how the Toastmaster organization can be more, if the word is, more progressive in its recruitment of younger generations, generation X and Y, to the actual organization. So I gave tips on how to recruit younger generations to the organization, but I also talked about the a new way of being a leader. In other words, the a new way of handling people, a new way of managing people when you're a leader in the 21st century.
Okay. Did you talk about podcasting as one of the ways
social
to bring
media?
In
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I did make mention of the social networks and of social media, from the LinkedIns to Twitters to MySpaces to Facebooks, blogs and videos and podcasts.
Right.
All these are mechanisms to connect us to the younger people who don't know about Toastmasters but yet would benefit from it.
Right.
Gotcha.
I always find it interesting whenever they bring out the fact that, what is it, Ryan, 35 or older, that's the majority of the people that are on Twitter.
That's right.
Yet Facebook is for the younger kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, we as the Toastmasters have to embrace this technology. See, here's the interesting thing is that the technology is not going to go anywhere because it allows us to communicate and connect with each other quicker. Mm-hmm. And any technology that allows quicker communication doesn't go away.
Right.
It evolves.
That's a good point.
So this is our platform that we have to master, because the next level up will more than likely build on these platforms we have.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, because people always say, well, you know what? Is Twitter going to be here a year from now, 2 years from now? It's like, it doesn't matter. The whole idea of the microblogging.
Right.
That is going to eventually progress, and it may...
Whether we call it Twitter or call
exactly,
it something else.
Call it something else, or whether it be an open standard, it's going to be around, and people need to get to... used to it, know how to use it.
Absolutely. It's just an evolution, but these will be, when people think of YouTube and Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, they're going to think of those as the founding social networks.
Mm-hmm.
And everything will be built upon those conceptually. They'll say, it was like Facebook, it was like Twitter.
Yeah,
and if you were never at the it was like phase, you'll be totally lost when the next evolution comes along.
That's a good point.
You have nothing to compare it to.
Correct.
So, Johnny, how long have you been a Toastmaster?
Been a Toastmaster now for 8 years, been a professional speaker for 10.
Okay.
And just been touring the country.
Good. So tell me, if you would, what's your, give us maybe the pulse of how Toastmasters, in your opinion, is doing in terms of reaching the younger generation in the 8 years you've been involved in Toastmasters. Are we progressing or are we losing our edge? What do you think?
I think that initially we were progressing, but as the new technology came on, we were a little slow in embracing the new technology, which is the newer ways to communicate our message. And so we're playing a little bit of catch up right now, because we've got to get ourselves up to speed as to what these technologies are and how to use them. Right now we're at the, okay, I got a Twitter, what do I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Where we need to be now at, I've had a Twitter, now I'm sending out tweets that are attracting people to come to our websites or to our videos to see what we've got.
Mm-hmm, right.
So it's all about us getting up to speed on the technology and how to apply it now versus just we have an account.
Right. It was very exciting, though, to see just this past week the announcement that the international convention is on Twitter.
That's, did you know that Toastmasters is on Twitter?
Yeah, that's what...
No,
oh.
Toastmasters.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I knew the convention was.
Twitter.com/Toastmasters.
Ah, very good.
They got it.
Very good.
Yeah, so they're definitely making progress.
Right.
And the individual clubs, what can the clubs do to embrace some of this technology at a club level?
Well, I think the biggest thing that the clubs can do is have open houses, but use the networks to let people know they're having open houses, to tweet out that, hey, we're having an open house on this night.
Mm.
Since you're on Twitter, you have 140 characters, so you can tweet out an open house plus kind of a theme of it. And that attracts young people when they hear about themes, and and this is a community in which you can learn and develop in. A lot of younger people are listening for the value behind the actual process. So really quick, when people say, I want to improve my communication skills, that's not the end result. That's merely a vehicle to take you where you want to go. So clubs have to talk about the end result benefit. This will help you get promoted. This will help you make more money. This will help you build your entrepreneurial business more effectively because you're a better leader or you're a better communicator. So we have to show the benefit behind what we are in essence, which is communication and leadership.
That's a great point. Yeah, so sell the benefits, not the features.
Right, but you got to let them know, hey, this is how you can make it.
Right.
And Toastmasters is the vehicle in which to get in order to succeed.
Got an important question for you. As the keynote speaker for the luncheon, did you get a chance to eat lunch?
No, I did not.
I didn't think so.
I warmed up See, being a speaker for 10 years has taught me a lot about the stage and about preparing yourself. And so, and
digestion.
Right, digestion. It's kind of like the same thing with swimming. Don't get in the water an hour or 2 hours after you've eaten. Right. Well, I normally don't eat before I speak at lunchtime because I want to stay light on my feet,
right,
and I want to stay quick,
right,
so that I can deliver a message that's sharp and on point. So,
yeah.
So no lunch.
Gotcha. Hope you're going to take care of that soon, though. You're looking hungry.
Yeah, put that down, Johnny. You can't eat that.
Right.
You can't eat a business card.
No.
All right. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us.
I appreciate the opportunity. I've got some if anybody has any questions for me, they can always email me. Can I tell my email?
No, of course. Yeah, please do.
Yeah, my email is johnny@transitionman.com. If they want to talk to me, they want to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/transitionman.
All right. And I take it you have a website called transitionman.com.
You better believe it. Wow. How did you know?
What a coincidence.
There's a transitionman.com site. I mean, it's been, like I said, it's the whole social thing is very exciting to me. And I even teach it now. So it's been a great thing to even go out and teach business owners.
That's great.
So
cool.
My pleasure for being with you guys.
Thank you so
much.
All right.
Take care. Bye. This is Bo Bennett and Ryan Levesque. We are here with past international president, Mr. Ted Corcoran. How are you, Ted?
Hey, I'm
Ted.
Very well indeed. Welcome, both of you, to Connecticut.
Thank you, and welcome to the United States.
Was that where I am? I thought I was in Canada.
You're further from home than we are, that's for sure.
How long did you travel?
Well, it started 7 hours to Philadelphia and then a layover and an hour down here, so it wasn't too bad.
So that accent, Eastern Asian?
Middle Asian. Thailand.
I knew it sounded familiar.
If anybody knows Ted, he's from Ireland. Right? What part of Ireland?
I was born in County Kerry, which is down on the Californian side of your country, that corner, and I live in Dublin, which is probably around South Carolina.
All right.
That part.
And you were international president 2003 to 2004.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What have you been doing since?
Well, I spent the following year as the immediate past international president, and then I...
You're the immediate past.
Then I'm the immediate, so I chaired the nominating committee, and I was a vice chair for a year. And you're talking about Toastmasters now, and then I belong to five or six clubs, and I go to two regularly, once a week. And,
wow.
I keep involved. I've joined Rotary International. I'm an assistant governor with them, but I'm not going to be the district governor because I don't want to do all this again.
Yeah.
And I'm involved in my golf club. I'm chairman of the council, and I run that. So, yeah, I keep busy. I can't really refuse any invitation to do something, which is really bad.
It works for us getting you on the podcast, though.
Indeed, my very first trip to Toastmasters was as a result of reading a letter in the evening paper. And I got it from the security guy at work because I wanted to read about a football game. And there was a letter in it saying this new Toastmasters club was being set up, and it was in a place called Clontarf in North Dublin, and about 3 miles from my home. I said, I must go along and see this and see what it does, but I'm not going to get involved. I am not going to get involved. So there was a demonstration meeting for about an hour, and then there was some tea, and the guy who had written the letter in the paper invited the Toastmasters in, booked the hotel, he went to the washroom. When he came back, I was the new president.
Made the biggest mistake. You brought your checkbook with you, didn't you?
Well, they approached me and said, you know, we'd like you to be the president of this new club. I said, okay.
Sounded tough, like a
well,
tough persuasion.
Well, I've gone through life by always accepting invitations. And if somebody says, okay, can you do this? I said, okay. And you learn from it, and you make more friends, but you do learn from it.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, Ted, I got a car outside that needs to be washed. Do you mind... give me a hand.
Well, my arthritis, unfortunately, in my wrists is quite severe.
Might be therapeutic for you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think the doctor said, no, don't use your hands for that, any kind of rough work like that. But I can tell you, I can lend you a dollar to go down to the wash, the automatic wash.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. We'll I know you're pretty after. Short of hard cash.
So what was the one thing that you remember most about your time as president?
Oh, there are several things. I started off on the right foot in that the international president hosts all the district governors and gets to meet them all just before we start. So in Atlanta, I was at this table of 10 people, and this gentleman was sitting across from me, and you will know him when I mention his name, because he's from around here.
Okay.
And he looked an elderly gentleman, so I asked him who he was. He said his name was Charlie Keane.
Oh, yes.
And he said I was the district governor of District 31, Massachusetts, etc. And I said, do you mind if I ask you how old you are? He said, I was 98 years of age on the 19th of July, 2003, that was. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, have you got a motto or a theme? Oh, he said, I have. What is it, I said? He said, I'm not done yet.
Hmm.
And a year later, I went to the region in in Marlborough,
yes,
outside Boston, and there was Charlie. And he met me at the airport, and Tom... Tom Weber was the driver, and we talked for an hour. But the next morning, an extraordinary thing happened. I was at a corporate breakfast, and I was invited to speak for 5 minutes. And when I sat down, Charlie was invited to speak. And he got up and he gave a speech at 99 years of age with no notes. I tell you, it's getting nearer for me. I hope I'm going to be able to do. I'm going to be able to do that. That was extraordinary. My visit to South Africa to go to Robben Island was very interesting, to see where Nelson Mandela was incarcerated for 19 years, and to watch his cell and look across. It's really a tough place to be. It's a bit like being in Alcatraz looking across at San Francisco. It's just a stone's throw away. So it was away in the distance where you couldn't see this. It might be less harrowing. So I'm looking across there, this is a stretch of sea, and looking at Table Mountain and saying, what a man to stay there for 19 years and come back out and forgive his enemies and become the president of his country. Quite an extraordinary thing.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. Absolutely.
That sounds wonderful. So what do you got planned for the future?
Well, I was thinking of changing my name by deed poll and running again and doing the whole thing.
Yay, if it works.
Well, I don't know whether it's in policy or bylaws or what, but, why not?
You should ask the past president. He might know.
Well, I'm only kidding, because this is a great honor to be the international president. You do it once, you do the best you can, and you try to change and bring forward the organization somewhat. So I'm infamous for being the president of the year the technology was changed, which really took everything else off the agenda that year.
Yeah.
But that technology change has led us to be the same to somebody in Shanghai or Dubai or Johannesburg or Dublin as somebody here in Orange County.
Mm.
And it was a really, really good investment, about $2 million. And it has transformed everything, because up to that you had to post everything from overseas. You couldn't pay by credit card. You had to get a bank draft.
Right.
If you got one member, you had to get a bank draft for the one member, and then next week another person arrived. So, of course, this has made the world much easier. And then today's decision is really, really a historic one for us who live outside North America, because the word international in Toastmasters International did not really mean in the full sense. It was Toastmasters International North America, and the rest of us were outside. And I understood for years why it wasn't possible to be closer, because of costs and finance.
Mm-hmm.
But we made a huge decision today, and I'm so delighted, because for the first time ever, we have one international organization with everybody being treated the same.
Ted, can you elaborate that a little bit for those who are listening who aren't very familiar with the decision that was made today?
Well, the proposal A was passed today by a two-thirds majority, and it means that the world will consist of 14 regions, and each of those will be dealt with, treated the same.
Mm-hmm.
So people will be trained in the same place. The contest will be on an equal footing. There will be one director per each region, and everything will be the same for everybody. And that is hugely important, because at the moment about 35% of the membership is outside North America.
Right.
And when I came here first 15 years ago, we were probably 12-13%. And if you look at the exponential growth outside, because we had eight districts then, districts. When I came here this week, we had 17.
Mm-hmm.
And by this time next year, we will have 20.
Wow.
Outside North America. The man from the district governor from Sri Lanka and India, District 82, Balraj.
Balraj.
That district didn't exist 2 years ago. has now been number one in the world for two consecutive years. He presented today to the international president, Gary, a box containing 15 charters. And it's only the middle of August.
Wow.
You can see the growth promise that's over there. The three ladies from China are here from District 85. Again, top six district. 1 billion people. India and Sri Lanka, 1 billion people. Mm. It's quite fascinating to watch the growth. And it brings to mind my rather infamous statement back in 1997 at my first board meeting when we were talking about the overseas, as they called them. And I said, you need to be very careful about looking after us and treating us fairly. I said, because one day you'll be the overseas Toastmasters.
Good point. Yeah,
that's true.
We're well, 35%, yeah.
Yeah, we're and rising.
Right. Well, Ted, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us and sharing some of these stories and educating us a little bit on this.
Happy to be here, Bo.
Proposal A, right.
And thank you again for your generosity in the Free Toast Host.
Oh, you bet.
That was really, really generous of you.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good seeing you again.
Okay.
Take care, Chris.
Take care, Ted. Say hello to Melissa. Say hello to Melissa.
He really knew Ryan's name. He was just joking.
Bo and I have the honor to be sitting here with Balaraj Arunasalam, who is the immediate past district governor of District 82. And Balaraj, we were just speaking earlier with Ted Corcoran, who is commending the success of District 82. You've broken some records here, I understand. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
And would you share with our listeners a little bit about the success of District 82 this past year?
The success of District 82 in the past year was growth of clubs, membership retention, educational goals, but more than all, the passion that has been driven by the Toastmasters program throughout India and Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. And India has probably the largest amount of English-speaking people in the world, with 500 million people speaking English.
Wow.
And Sri Lanka, 20 million, but both countries put together had a growth of 53 clubs.
Wow. In 1 year?
In 1 year.
That's incredible.
Yes.
And you gave a box to the president?
Today we gave a box of 13 new club charters to the incoming president, newly elected president Gary Smith.
Wow.
And we have already got 5 clubs chartered after the 1st of July to now. So the growth this year so far is 18 clubs.
Holy. And you guys are going, I heard you're shooting for 100.
We will definitely do 100 this year.
Definitely.
That's
confidence, my friend.
That's how you hit those goals.
And the growth in District 82 is unstoppable at this time. So we're also aware that we need to be strong, not only grow just for the sake of growing, but we will build a strong district, and we are in the process of building faculty before even starting, and I for one don't advocate clubs to start if they do not have a sustenance plan of 4 years.
Wow.
And if they do have one, they can show us one, then we encourage them to start a club.
Now, Balaraj, I'm wondering what other clubs around the world can learn from that concept of having a sustenance plan of 4 years. What does that mean, to have a sustenance plan?
Before you could walk into a corporation, mm-hmm. or setting up a community club, you should do some research of the corporation's needs and also the culture that the corporations have, and also, more importantly, the rotation of staff, transferable staff members in the club. So that you need to be aware of all these things to see whether the club can sustain itself and whether you have corporate support, the management support. If in the event club officers move out, whether the new club officers will come into play and then keep the clubs strong, otherwise the clubs will die.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And there is no purpose of starting a club if a club is already going to die.
Sure,
that's true.
And it is not a number game. It is a member game.
Mm. Yeah. How many times have we seen that happen in our district, Ryan, or in any district for that matter? Clubs start and the management gets fired or laid off, and new management comes in and they just don't support it.
Well, right. If we don't have the management support, we don't start a club there.
Wow.
Yes. class. And in the university clubs, in the college clubs, if the faculty doesn't support us, if the admin staff is not a member of that college club, we don't want to start a club.
So what advice can you give to other districts? If you had maybe one piece of advice to give to other districts starting clubs, what would it be?
First, the other one piece of advice that I would give the district governors is to understand the leaders. Why leading the leaders is the biggest phenomena and the biggest opportunity that we have through the Toastmasters program. And if we know our leaders, it is very easy to start clubs. And in corporate clubs, first thing is that we have to get corporate clubs on board is not difficult at all if you can do research on the corporation. Mm-hmm. And talk of the advanced manuals that we have, there is definitely one skill that they will need out of the 75 different projects that we have in the advanced manuals. For
so sure. when you're referring to leaders, are you referring to the other district officers?
Or district officers.
Okay.
District officers.
Great.
Because they're our ambassadors and they're our faculty. Mm-hmm. So unless we build them up, unless you know whom you're leading, unless that leadership team is cohesive, it's very difficult to grow.
Right.
It's very difficult to grow.
Well put.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You take care.
Thank you.
And that is it for part two of the Toastmasters podcast, the convention edition. My name is Beau Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.